It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. People spend a good deal of money on headphones to get the best sound quality possible. However, some are seeking a good set of headphones to block out noise. According to the World Health Organization, sounds louder than 85 decibels, such as a riding mower, require ear protection to prevent hearing loss. There's no denying we live in an increasingly loud world. But how is this affecting our health? Our Mysteries of Pittsburgh contributors, Ellis Robinson and Daniel Tachik, went in search of an answer.
Hi, everyone. When Daniel and I sit down to record, this is Ellis, by the way, we usually try to find a quiet space on Carnegie Mellon's campus, where both of us work.
Yeah, and it turns out that even on a college campus, where students need places to focus and think, quiet spaces are not easy to come by.
Even in the quietest classroom, there's buzzing lights, blowing computer fans, buses driving by.
Our solution, if we can't find a suitable space to record, is to cover ourselves in blankets and record under all the sound-muting fabric.
Which, by the way, is what we're currently doing, profusely sweating because the AC has to be off to get the sound levels down. But it's really the only option we have, and it gets the job done.
This got us wondering, was it this hard to find silent places, say, 50, 100 years ago?
You would think. It was quieter back then. Less stuff buzzing, beeping, and less noise.
We called up George Prochnik. He's the author of the book In Pursuit of Silence.
Here's our conversation with George about all things noise, silence, and whether or not the world is louder today than it used to be.
The only place I think I can say where I've ever felt like I was in total silence was in Mammoth Caves. I don't know if you're familiar, George.
Sure.
We were down there with a group of six people or something, and the guide was like, okay, let's all shut our lights off and just sit here. And like, I think that was the first time I could really kind of hear my heart beat.
How old were you, if I can ask, when you had that experience?
This was recent, just a few years ago. And yeah, it was like by far the most silent thing that I'd ever at least been cognizant of.
I would certainly argue that something like your experience would have been much more common for many more people before the age that you encountered it in the past. One of the sort of larger findings of the research that I tried to do when writing this book convinced me that it can be difficult to make the argument that things are noisier in the sense that everywhere there are higher volumes today than there were in the past. At the same time, that there's not necessarily more noise everywhere, there's less silence.
So it's almost like today the noise is just more smeared over the landscape, whereas
it's more constant. Yeah, I think, you know, maybe not more noise, but less silence is the way I came to think of it.
Interesting. What do you personally find so valuable in silence?
For me, one incontestable benefit of silence is an ability to gather my thoughts, to reflect, to focus. You know, I'm a writer of all sorts of different things. And writing in an environment that's loud, I just find my thoughts diffract. And if I'm in a quieter space, I can get to something more interesting in whatever it is I'm trying to focus my attention on. So the quickest answer to that would be I take from silence the ability to pay attention to the world and to pay attention to, in fact, to something beyond my own discomfort, beyond myself, ironically.
You were saying that, you know, in silent places is where you can think best, and that probably goes for most of us. Does that touch on why you wrote this book?
You know, I've lived in New York off and on really for my whole adult life, and I felt over time that there were, even in the span of time I've been in the city, fewer places of refuge, less possibilities for finding the quiet that made me able to imagine, made me able to really open myself to the environment. And I worried also, though, that there's a natural tendency to become more sensitive to sound with age, at least stereotypically there is. I wanted to see whether there really had been a change in the soundscape that I could pin down, or whether I was just becoming grouchier over time.
It's almost kind of weird walking in somewhere where there's like a lot of people, but it's very quiet. It makes you feel uncomfortable. And I don't know if it's always been this way, if it really is like just I'm now addicted to this level of sound. I have this new baseline. Do you think there were these uncomfortable silences, you know, say 100 years ago?
I mean, look, I think there were always uncomfortable silences, but I think also that it was possible to have a more sociable level of sound and conversation that wasn't scary. What I think has happened is the sort of sonic ecosystem has gone way out of balance. And in the same way that you might speak of a problem in our typical diet of having too much high sugar, high fat, high salt food, I think that we now have a sonic diet that is far too saturated in large, overwhelming sounds that make us unaware of the richness, in fact, of the sonic tapestry in which we live.
That's really well put. And yeah, it totally strikes a chord with me when I'm thinking about where I like to go eat dinner and, you know, talk to people and hear nice, like, clanging forks as opposed to some really heavy music that drowns it all out.
You know, I'd like to just, if I could, say one thing on that point. There's been at least one quite rigorous study that found that loud music does accelerate people's drinking. So if you take how much of restaurant money, let alone a bar money, where it's all that you're going to have is revolving around the alcohol sales, there may be a really strict relationship between sound levels and the aspiration to make more money. I don't think that that's at all accidental.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I mean, you're talking about how music and different sounds can cause us to eat more, talk more, whatever, just induce activity. But, you know, a question that I really want to get into is how is this affecting our health? And I guess to start off, can you just explain why chronic noise leads to stress in the first place?
Mammalian hearing really developed as an early warning system. It was important for our ancestors to be able to hear as much as possible because hearing enabled them to become aware of threats that were at that point invisible and were probably threats that they had to respond to if they weren't going to get eaten. For the same reason, however, that we needed to or our ancestors needed to hear every sound in our environment, we also respond to sounds, loud sounds in particular, as potential threats. So when, for example, a siren goes by, although we might be completely psychologically indifferent to that, our bodies don't ever learn that that siren isn't coming for us. We respond with all sorts of stress hormones, etc., to even sounds that we don't pay any attention to at all if they fall into the category of potential threats.
Interesting. So what does this mean?
What this means, for example, is that people's ability to get used to a noisy environment in their minds has nothing to do with what's going on in their bodies. Some of the most rigorous and disturbing studies that I saw were studies done around airports. Scientists were looking at the effects of air traffic noise on people who thought they slept through the night. And in fact, they found that with every plane passage, there was vasoconstriction, elevated heartbeat, blood pressure went up, there was release of stress hormones, etc., and all of these negative cardiovascular events continued for up to 6 hours after these people left the environment, their home environments, even if their workspace was relatively quiet. Because, again, we are responding to every sound as though it's something we better pay attention to because it might indicate a predator, we are definitely experiencing all sorts of measurable heart and full body stress in consequence of this.
It's so fascinating. You can't do more to control for, you know, how we've psychologically inured ourselves to the noise of kind of the modern world by studying people who are asleep.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is really frightening. And I mean, there were so many people who I spoke to over the course of research who saw issues of noise as something, you know, basically as something get over it. In a sense, you can say that the ability to psychologically block out noise has its own dangers because it allows many more people to not try and do something to change their environment so that they're more physiologically protected.
Most people are familiar with the unit of a decibel. Is it just the volume that noise can induce stress and affect our body in a physical way? Or is there another consideration about, you know, the types of noise?
It's certainly not the case that it's strictly a matter of volume. For one thing, anthropogenic noise, man-made manufacturing noise, it simply has a different effect on people than natural noise. To give one very specific example, there was a park that in I believe it was in Stockholm, it was a small city park that was surrounded on three sides by traffic that the park designers couldn't really do much to mitigate the traffic noises. And instead what they did was they actually added a water feature to the park, as well as did some plantings that encouraged different sorts of birds to come who they knew had particular kinds of bird song, etc. And what they found is that even when the actual decibel count in the park had gone up by several decibels, the people, without exception, in the park reported finding it quieter once they'd made these changes. So that the natural sounds in some way diminished the impact of the anthropogenic noise of traffic.
After writing this book, whenever you're paying attention to policies in cities or buildings or even research about this kind of thing, like what kind of measures could be done to improve this plague of noise that we have?
The very unfortunate thing that has happened is that silence is becoming increasingly commodified. The more that people in underprivileged neighborhoods and underprivileged apartment blocks, etc., are simply allowed to exist in sonic dumping grounds, whereas at least the people who are relatively affluent can often, to some degree, barricade themselves against this, we're seeing another kind of divide opening up. And I think it's a profound responsibility on the part of those of us who have some consciousness of the degree to which our acoustic ecology right now is out of whack to try to make silence more democratically accessible. And I'm convinced that it can be done.
That was author George Prochnick talking to us about his pursuit of silence in a noisy world.
For Essential Pittsburgh, I'm Ellis Robinson.
And I'm Daniel Tachik.
That interview originally aired as part of the podcast I Wonder. You can find a link to the entire episode on our website. After the break, we'll continue our examination of the toll noise pollution is having on your health. That's when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.